Juliet Dogcast Radio. If you like dogs, wherever you are in the world, we're the show for you. Hello, and welcome to episode 71 of Dogcast Radio. In this show, we have help for anyone whose dog suffers separation anxiety.
Separation anxiety is, again, a very common issue with dogs because dogs are very hardwired to be with their pack. Dogs are very, very social animals.
We have a profile of a very popular breed, the Border Collie.
The wrong reasons to get a Border Collie are, I want to do agility or compete, or I want a Border Collie because they're easy, or I've seen one and it looks so nice and it was doing all these tricks, all the wrong reasons.
And we have a special summer report from the Dogcast Radio news team. But we start with a fiction feature, Teamwork, written and read by Julie Hill. Beth wanted the best out of life for her rescue dog, Jake. He was almost a year when she adopted him, and once she felt she had gained his confidence, she set about finding an activity in an attempt to make the time they shared even better. She had taken him to some fun shows, and he had not behaved himself very well, so she started off with a ringcraft class near her home. There was only a nominal fee, the other participants were very welcoming, and Jake seemed to like the company. However, even after a few weeks, there was one thing he repeatedly got wrong. Every time anyone tried to examine him by running their hands over him, he lay down to have his tummy tickled. Despite offering treats, encouragement, and using a clicker, Beth could not convey to him that she wanted him to remain standing at that point. The ringcraft classes came to an end, but Beth was not too disappointed, and since Jake was full of energy, the next activity they tried was agility. Jake obviously loved it. He could jump the highest jump, wriggle through the tunnel, had no fear on the high walkways or A-frames, and even made a good attempt at the weave poles. It was Beth that let them down. She couldn't get the hang of where to stand, which arm to use to bring him towards her or send him away, and in the heat of the moment, she repeatedly confused her left and right commands, sending poor Jake running off in the wrong direction. At obedience classes, Jake simply wasn't obedient enough, and when he began distracting many of the other dogs, Beth thought it time to call it a day. She had watched Heel Work to Music, marvelling at the skill of dog and human moving together in complicated sequences. Though Jake began to master simple moves, it became clear that Beth had no sense of rhythm and was lumbering round the designated area in a manner that would never make anyone marvel. At flyball classes, Jake was quick enough to run down the course and grab the ball, but having caught it, he ran off with it, refusing to bring it back. They attended a dock dogs demonstration. Most other dogs leapt forward from the dock, sending up a great splash before swimming back to clamber up the exit ramp. Jake cowered at the edge of the pool, refusing to jump in. Beth researched disc dogs, where dogs retrieve frisbees. But this time, not only did Jake run off with his retrieved prize, he lay down and chewed it to pieces. She turned to the internet for more suggestions of doggy sports they could try, and there was no shortage of them, from karting to skijoring to scent trailing. Surely there must be something out there that was right for them, although they had not so far proved to be an unbeatable team. But when he was sitting at her bedside every morning when she woke up, eyes pinned to her face, patiently waiting for his first stroke, when they strolled through the woods, him running back, checking in and nudging her hand before scampering off again. When he rested his chin gently on her lap, when she was feeling down. When they just gazed into each other's eyes, silently communing. When he curled in the crook of her knee as she lay on the sofa, his head on her hip, her hand on his head. Then, in these moments, she knew they were the best team ever. A dog has a share in man's intelligence, but no share in his falsehood. Sir Walter Scott. You're listening to Dogcast Radio on www.dogcastradio.com. We were contacted by a listener whose dog suffers from separation anxiety. When Scruffy is left, she is distressed and barks to the extent that her owner is now having problems with the neighbours complaining about the noise. Clearly, something needs to be done, as nobody is happy with the current situation. I asked expert trainer and author of Zen Shen, Cindy Scott, for her advice on coping with separation issues.
Well, first of all, let me say separation anxiety is, again, a very common issue with dogs because dogs are very hardwired to be with their pack. Mm. Dogs are very, very social animals. And when we adopt one into our family, we become their pack. And to a dog, being away from its pack is a life-threatening situation. I mean, their survival depends on being with their pack. So they're very hardwired to be with us and to be in a social situation. Separation anxiety is something that's very common. And I see it a lot. I mean, there's no hard evidence for this, but very anecdotally, I see it a lot with rescue dogs or dogs that have been rehomed.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's because they bond to us faster than a dog that's coming from, you know, a breeder
yeah.
or some other situation. But I see it a lot in rescue dogs. And first of all, what we want to do, if your dog already has an issue, you've been told by your neighbors or whatever that they are barking, my first recommendation is to set up a tape recorder or a camera if you have that. And see what they actually do. Don't take somebody's word for it. Set it up and see how bad it really is.
Yeah.
I have actually had some instances where it wasn't the client's dog barking. It was the neighbor's dog.
Oh.
And they didn't know that. The neighbor just thought that it was their dog.
Yeah.
So I have had some instances of that. So I always recommend setting up a camera, and even if it is your dog, then we can see the extent of it. We can see how long they're doing the barking, at what intervals that they're doing the barking. Set up the camera to see if the dog is doing other destructive behaviors. Separation anxiety can manifest itself in, of course, vocalization, howling, barking, whining. It can also manifest itself in destructive behaviors, chewing. You know, some dogs will, you know, chew through doors to get out. Also, it can manifest itself in urination and defecation.
Yeah.
Some dogs become so stressed and anxious that they'll just pee and poop all over the house.
Mm.
So, what you're dealing with is basically like a panic attack. They just are so frenzied that they don't even realize what they're doing. So we can't punish it. Because by punishing it or just setting up booby traps, those sorts of things, one, it can make them more panicked and more fearful, and two, it doesn't get rid of the underlying anxiety. It just maybe will stop them, you know, from doing the one behavior. So if your dog is barking and you put, say, you know, a shock collar on them or something, it will stop them from barking, but they still have the anxiety,
yeah.
So you may see them then start to be destructive.
Yes.
Or do some other type of behavior to get relieve themselves of that anxiety. So instead of just paying attention to the symptoms, what we want to do is go to the underlying behavior, which is the anxiety.
Mm.
So first of all, tape it, see exactly what you're dealing with, see exactly the extent of the problem. And then there's a couple of things that we do. One, basically we want to teach the dog to like to be left alone. So when you leave your dog, the first rule of thumb is ignore them for about the first 15, 20 minutes. Put your dog where they're going to be and then just leave. No emotional, drawn-out, goodbye, I'll see you later, be a good boy, kiss, kiss, hug, hug, and then you leave. Well, if you do that emotional goodbye, then the dog is kind of amped up. He's like, oh, what's going on? And he's ready for a party, and then you leave.
Yeah.
So his stress level is already heightened. Now, the same thing when you come home, you want to ignore the dog for about 15, 20 minutes. So, of course, they're going to be jumping up, excited to see you, la, 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 la. ignore them. Come in, put your stuff down, go about your business, and then after about 15, 20 minutes, then you can greet them. Because if you come home, and of course we've missed them all day, so you immediately come home and it's like, oh, I missed you. How was your day? Hug, hug, kiss, kiss. And it's a party time. Now, dogs are really good about anticipating our schedule. So if you come home at the same time every day, your dog knows that. And he's going to start getting amped up if you do these emotional greetings. Now, your dog, with their great sense of hearing, they know the difference between your car and your neighbor's car. You could have the same make, the same model, and they know the difference in the engines. So they can hear your car coming, you know, two blocks away, and they're getting amped up, getting excited. So what we want to do, low-key arrivals and departures, you come, you go, it's no big deal. And then when you do have to leave your dog, you want to give him some extra special toys to play with. So if he does become a little anxious, he'll be chewing on his toy and not barking at squirrels or chewing your couch or whatever they're doing while you're gone.
Yeah.
And the toys that I recommend, the best toy on the market is the Kong ball. It's K-O-N-G. And they have a wonderful website called, I believe it's KongCompany.com. Mm-hmm. And they're at all pet stores. It's a wonderful toy. It's, well, there's different designs, but the original one is a round, beehive-shaped rubber ball.
Mm.
And what's great about it is it's hollow on the inside. So you can put food in it. So if you're going to be at work all day, don't feed your dog in the bowl, take the food and put it in the Kong.
Yeah.
Put a little peanut butter maybe on top or smush it to the sides so it's more difficult for your dog to get out. And if he's hungry, he's going to be working on that Kong ball instead of, again, barking at your neighbors, chewing your couch, whatever he's doing.
Yeah.
The Kong with food in it is like Nintendo for your dog. It gives them something to do while you're gone. You wouldn't expect your kid just to sit and stare at a wall all day.
No, no.
And the dog is the same way. Sometimes we're not really sure if it's separation anxiety or just separation relief that now they're able to do the stuff that they weren't able to do while you're at home. And they're going to be bored. They're alone. They've got all this time on their hands. What are they going to do? So give them something to do. And you can leave, you know, two or three. If you're going to be gone for a long time, leave two or three Kongs with your dog. Smush different food in each one. So, again, it keeps them busy, gives them something to do. And it is exercise because they have to work at it and get the food out. And then hopefully they'll get a little tired and they'll take a little nap. If you leave the Kongs with some really good food in it that they only get while you're gone, you're actually rewarding your dog for being left alone.
Yes.
It's like, yeah, leave. I get my peanut butter. See ya. Don't let the door hit you on the way out. So with the Kong ball, what we're doing is redirecting that energy into something positive. We're rewarding them for being left alone. And we're also providing a means of exercise. So hopefully they will tucker themselves out and take a little nap the rest of the time that you're gone. So your low-key arrivals and departures, give them something to do while you're gone. And sometimes you can also leave like a little white noise going, like a TV or a radio or even the white noise like between stations, something to kind of filter in that quiet background. There's also different herbal remedies that you can try if your dog is really severe and doing a lot of destructive behaviors. There's box flower remedy.
Yes.
And other things that kind of take the edge off while you're doing the behavior modification. If your dog is really severe, there's also different pharmaceuticals that you can give to your dog. But of course, you know, that's something that you would, even if you do the box flower, you'd want to consult your vet before doing anything like that. But using some of those in conjunction with the behavior modification helps things to go along a little bit faster, just to speed it up a bit. And if you're having a real severe case of it, particularly if your dog is chewing walls or doing something that can be where there's a safety issue, obviously we want to speed it up as fast as we can. Or if the neighbors are breathing down your neck, that's also another option to do something to help kind of take the edge off of your dog.
Yeah, yeah. What you were saying earlier about sort of if you just eliminate a symptom, a behavior, and it will come out in a different behavior.
Right.
Presumably, if you just set about eliminating enough behaviors, you're just going to drive the dog madder and madder, aren't you? As you say, you've got to address where, you know,
right,
calm them down and address the actual fear they're feeling, haven't you?
Right, exactly. And there is a phenomenon called learned helplessness, where if you just punish, the dog will just literally sit and do nothing, and they just shut down.
Oh.
It's a learned helplessness, where I can't do this, I can't do that, I can't do this, so they'll just kind of shut down.
Yeah.
And if they can't do anything external to help relieve their anxieties, of course they've still got them, so that's when sometimes obsessive compulsive behaviors will come out.
Yeah.
Where dogs will chew themselves, chew their hindquarters and get hot spots,
oh,
or they'll just sit and lick their feet incessantly,
yeah,
or do something else. So if you just went around punishing each behavior, if the punishment was severe enough, they would stop doing it, but they would just do something else.
Yeah, yeah.
Unless you eliminate that fear altogether. And it's really sad to see that. When you see a dog that just shuts down and does nothing, because you know what must have transpired to get them to that point. You know?
Yeah.
Because it's not normal for a dog just to sit there and do nothing.
No, no.
So
separation anxiety, if we take these steps, sort of, what's our likelihood of succeeding with this?
You know, it's amazing. Just changing a few things really does have a dramatic effect. The the low-key arrivals and departures in of itself really has amazing success. Just walking out the front door, coming back in, walking out the front door, coming back in, teaching your dog to be alone. Now, of course, it depends on each individual dog, and it depends on the severity of the issues that you're having as to, you know, how long it will take for your dog to get over the symptoms. It can take anywhere from a week to 6 months, depending, you know, on your consistency and, of course, on your dog. But it really never ceases to amaze me. Just changing a couple of things makes a dramatic impact.
Yeah.
So it really, the success rate is really high. It's really high.
Yeah.
Unless, of course, there's underlying issues, if your dog has some physiological issues going on, then, of course, that's a separate issue. But if your dog doesn't have anything physiological going on, the success rate is really high.
Happily, Scruffy's owner, who contacted us about this originally, has found a solution whereby a friend looks after her dog during the day. But as Cindy says, most dogs can adapt to being left, and you can help them be happy to be left. To find out more about Cindy Scott, follow the links on the Dogcast Radio site to her websites, dogsetc.org and enlightened-dog-training.com. A dog is like an eternal Peter Pan, a child who never grows old, and who therefore is always available to love and be loved. Erin Catcher, American educator and psychiatrist.
Hello and welcome to the Dogcast Radio News Desk. I'm Nick.
And I'm Kate. Now that we're in the middle of summer, in today's programme we are focusing on keeping our dogs safe and comfortable in hot weather.
Of course, the big no-no is leaving dogs in cars. It's amazing how hot cars can get, and how fast they can reach these temperatures. If it's 85 degrees Fahrenheit outside, inside a car the temperature can be 102 degrees within 10 minutes. By 30 minutes the temperature will be 120 degrees, and on really sunny days the same figure can be reached in 6 to 10 minutes. Unfortunately, leaving car windows slightly open or parked in the shade doesn't lower the temperature significantly.
Dogs are at risk of heat stroke once the thermometer hits 120 degrees Fahrenheit, and a dog left in a hot car can suffer serious health problems after 15 minutes and be dead within a mere 20 minutes. It's just not worth risking it, so if it's a hot day and you can't take your dog inside with you wherever you're going, then it's best to leave him safely at home.
One of the problems for dogs is that they naturally conserve heat. They can only sweat through their tongue and their feet. Panting helps, of course, but in a hot car, there's only hot air to breathe, so panting becomes ineffective. Some breeds suffer worse from the heat, the most affected being flat-faced ones, such as bulldogs, but young, old, overweight, or already ill dogs can be extra vulnerable.
It's important to know the signs of heat stroke, as it is essential to tackle it as soon as possible. If your dog pants heavily, his eyes look glazed, he seems restless, dizzy, or disorientated, then start to check him. Is his heart beating fast? Is his temperature high? Is he drooling? And remember, if things become worse, he could vomit or pass out.
In the initial stages, move your dog to a cooler environment. Moisten his coat, but do be careful not to use water that's too cold, as you'll narrow the blood vessels nearer the surface, actually causing him to heat up. Start with slightly cooler water and gradually lower the temperature. Getting him to drink water can help, but if you're not seeing an improvement, get him to a veterinarian fast.
Of course, life has to carry on through the summer months, so the following tips will help ensure you have a cool canine and not a hot dog.
Take water in a bowl with you on your outings and make sure he can choose to be in the shade if he prefers. Keep walks to early morning or late evening and don't let him overexert himself. Sidewalks and roads can be scorching hot, so try to let him walk on grass. You can buy booties to protect your dog's feet from hot surfaces, but make sure he is comfortable in them by introducing them gradually.
Keep the house as cool as you can, and always make sure the water bowl is full. You can add a few ice cubes, which you can even flavour with chicken or beef.
Coats need particular care in the summer. Don't assume you have to clip a long-coated dog, as if you do, you can be removing a great natural sunscreen. Do make sure you brush longer coats regularly, as this will remove dead hair and ensure they stay as cool as possible. If your dog has short hair, invest in a doggy sunblock, particularly if he is light-coloured.
There are many products on offer, such as vests and bandanas, that cool through evaporation. Waterbeds, fans and air conditioning units for crates. And, of course, you could always simply put a paddling pool in the backyard.
If you'd like to find out more, both the Humane Society and the Kennel Club have further advice. But for now, that's all from us on the Dogcast Radio News Desk. Goodbye.
A dog wags its tail with its heart. Martin Buxbaum. Barbara Sykes has been a member of the British Institute of Professional Dog Trainers since 1984. She's been involved in training and teaching canine behaviour for over 30 years. As you'll hear in the interview, she is extremely qualified to give a breed profile of that most popular and most misunderstood breed, the Border Collie. Barbara's even developed her own philosophy of training, TLC, which stands for Thinking Like Canines.
It's basically about getting into the dog's mind and seeing the world from his point of view. So it can actually give the dog a lot of freedom. We would say if you're going to stand and talk to somebody, why should your dog sit down? As long as it stands and behaves itself and is well-mannered, it's like the manners of a five-year-old child. It's looking at the world from the dog's point of view and giving it a certain amount of freedom within its boundaries. I firmly believe if somebody keeps throwing a ball away, the dog has got every right to turn around and say, go fetch it yourself. You keep throwing it away.
Yeah.
You have to look at how the dog is thinking. And the think from the pack point of view, and so many people have a dog that will come back on a recall and then it stops. And it's actually giving you respect, stopping, just that distance away, it's so bad mannered to go into the personal space of another dog or a person. But once that person lowers themselves and starts trying to coax the dog in, the dog is then bringing itself up in status to level with you or even above you. And all you have to do is turn the hip to the dog to bring it in. And we have a recall and the formal present of the obedience dog, but that's the competition where the dog comes and sits in front of you. The correct place for a dog to come back is to come behind you, because that's where it would come with the pack leader. That's giving respect and manners, but it's also giving the dog 100% protection from that owner. In just the same way we have socialisation, which none of my trainers do, we do familiarisation. Because socialisation to the human being is to socialise, to mix, to get on with each other. But you wouldn't say to a child, there's a new family moved in the street, go and investigate.
No.
You do all the vetting of these people first. You decide when and where your children can go. And you watch like a hawk at the first sign of a problem and you bring them back. So if you look at the tribe of Indians or the pack of dogs, the last things to mix and socialise are the youngsters. It's just not allowed. And yet we put all these dogs in to socialise. It's this thing of the dog has to be socialised and learn to mix and go to other dogs. But that would never happen in the wild. So we change it to familiarisation classes where a dog has to learn to accept there are other dogs and there are other people. There are cars, cyclists, bicycles, wheelbarrows, hose pipes. It goes on in our lives, but it doesn't have to concern us. That makes the dog feel safe, and it also stops it from becoming a problem dog. So rather than encourage, I mean, imagine a guide dog for the blind being encouraged to go up to every dog it sees. It can't happen.
No.
And yet those dogs are very well-balanced, well-stabilised dogs. In just the same as a sheepdog, it has to learn when it's working sheep. You can't go bounding off to somebody who's on the footpath. You're doing a job of work. So these dogs are familiarised with these situations. That's what happens in the wild. That's what's natural to a dog. So I get people coming to me as a behaviourist, and they'll say, I've got a problem with my dog. It keeps running up to other dogs and people and jumping up, and I can't stop it. Have you done a lot of socialisation with other dogs and people? Oh, yeah. Well, that's your problem. You've actually taught it to do this. Whereas our dogs here, they will go up to people, they're friendly with people, but they don't have to go up to everybody to see, and they certainly don't bother with other people's dogs. But then they don't get into a fight, they don't upset anybody, they will stay with me. And if I take them to a seminar and I say, go and meet people, they will go. If I don't, they will just sit with me and they won't go. They're not interested or bothered, they're more interested or bothered what I do.
Yeah.
Because I'm the parent figure to them, the pack leader, and they're familiar with all these different situations and just say, well, yeah, it'll all gone around me because basically she'll sort it out. I don't have to worry about it.
Yes,
it's getting inside their head and seeing the world from their point of view. Basically giving them what they need to be able to understand how we need them to react.
Yeah.
It's talking to them in their own language with body language, which is what TLC is all about.
Yeah. Now, you're one of the few lady handlers to reach the top in, it says, the very male-dominated sheepdog trialling world. And you've competed in seven English national trials and been a member of the winning English team at the international trials as well.
That's right. Yeah,
yeah, wow. So you know your stuff.
Oh, I enjoyed those days. I don't do it now. I've retired from it, but I had some real good fun when we were sheepdog trialing. There was a real camaraderie about it in those days, and I was competitive with my dog. I've had some fantastic dogs, and I really loved doing it.
Yeah.
Since then, I sort of moved, and I've gone more now into the rescue and the baby side of it. And, of course, there's Mainline Border Collie Centre, which the website has all the TLC information on it, and that's basically where all my time is involved now with that and the trust.
Yeah. So, you know, I mean, I have to mention, you've also trained dogs for several television programmes as well. And again, yeah. People can find out about this on the Mainline site. It's fascinating. Tons of information there. And that tells you about your farm, doesn't it, where people can actually go and stay. Is that right?
That's right. They don't stay here. They stay at a local B&B that we work with. And what we do is, basically, I work on the principle, for you to understand something, you have to experience it. So we actually run what we call the sheepdog experience, where people can come here and they can work a trained dog around sheep for a day. And it isn't the easy thing of going out there with a dog that when you push the right buttons, it does it. They are working dogs, dogs that have either trialled or are still working or are semi-retired, and they have a mind of their own. And it's not done with the intention of come and work a border collie and go out and get one. It's done with come and work these dogs around the sheep, find out how they think, what makes them tick, how to communicate with them. Find out that it's not the easiest thing in the world to bring any dog up or to train it, but you can have so much fun relating to the natural side of the dog and letting the dog be a dog. That is what it's all about, to actually experience working with these dogs in the natural and with their minds just working situations out. We have people spend a day with us and they say, I shall never go back and see my dog in the same light. I can't believe how intelligent they are and how they can actually converse with them.
Yeah.
And that's what it's all about, is letting people have that experience. You don't have to have a dog of your own. You don't have to have a border collie. You might have a Labrador Spaniel, but it helps you get in the mind of the dog and just see how they work. When you actually send the dog out to work sheep and you tell it to go to the left and it doesn't, it goes to the right. And you say, no, I told you to do this. And the dog turns around and it looks easy to say, yes, but if I had a done, I would have lost those sheep. Mm-hmm. I'm doing the job. It's up to you to get your act together and know what you're doing. And you can actually see the dog. We actually have one dog here. He's one of the ambassador dogs. He's amazing. And there's a point where you tell a dog what to do. TLC has four non-negotiable commands. Stop, stay, come back, walk behind. Those are four commands that we don't negotiate on. The rest of them are negotiable, because that allows the dog to think. So if I say that'll do to a dog, that's its recall, it must come back to me. If I say come here, that means it's to stay in the vicinity, not just go wandering off when I'm talking to somebody. And you build this up as you're going on. But this gentleman was in the field with this dog and he would keep telling him what to do. And the dog was almost saying to him, look, if I do what you say, I'm not going to be able to do my job properly, you're making it harder for me. And this gentleman would insist on trying to make the dog do. So the dog took the three sheep through the gate and put them on the lane. They came back without them. It was just to say, look, if you're not going to do it properly, I'm not going to play. You're not having the sheep. Walked off with them. Look, bring these sheep back. And no, you sort him out first. And it's that humour that they've got, and that way they'll work the situation out. You know, it's just amazing.
Yeah.
And they're not working the same dog. They're working different dogs. So when they work Little Mossy, they realise, look, if you don't actually mean it when you say it, this dog is just going to run the sheep straight over the top of you.
Yeah.
And if you don't actually respect the fact that Locke is an older dog and knows what he's doing, he will take the sheep and go and put them in a building somewhere. Whereas Jim, you can put a 10-year-old child in with Jim and he'll just say, well, you just walk around the field and I will keep these sheep with you. So he's a real confidence giver. So you start them off with the confidence dogs and then you say, now I think you can manage this dog. It's just not that easy. You know, during the course of the day, you build them up to give them a really difficult dog. The dogs that turn around and say, well, hang on a minute, do you know what you're saying? Do you know your left from your right?
Mm.
And it's that experience of actually conversing with these dogs and thinking, wow, you know, they really have got this presence about them. They're fantastic breed. Absolutely amazing.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you've given us an insight there into what they're like to live with. If someone's looking or considering getting a border collie, what do they need to know?
If they're getting a puppy, they need to go to somebody who is breeding for a replacement. And just don't go to a breeder who is breeding commercially. If they're not breeding for replacement, they're breeding to make money. And that's when common sense goes out the window. Breeding is a really important part of it. You have to breed out and in to keep a breed true.
Hmm.
And when people start breeding a specific colour to a specific colour, or a winner to a winner, a champion to a champion, that's when they're not breeding compatibly. And although the breed lines might be really good, if they're not compatible and they haven't done the research correctly, that's when you get puppies with problems. If somebody's breeding for replacement, well, then they know what they're breeding with and they're intending to keep one back, so they will have bred them right. That's the first thing on getting a puppy, which is word of mouth as much as anything, rather than the breeder's register.
Mm.
And you need to keep them on the correct diet. All this feeding puppy food until the 6 month and a year old, these dogs, their growth rate slows down after the first 3 or 4 months. the need to be kept on a low-energy diet. They were bred to work hard on low-energy food, and to give them the modern food or colourants in the food makes them hyperactive. If you're getting a short coat with prick ears, or you're getting a red dog, or a dog with a lot of tan on it, you could be getting one with a high-energy gene. And these dogs, you know, I hear people say you shouldn't have a border collie where there's children. I grew up with them, my kids grew up with them, and my grandchildren are growing up with them. But you have to be aware that when you have a dog, you have a place for the dog to go that is it, and you have a place for the child that is a dog-free zone. For example, when my grandchildren come, if there's grandchildren on the rug in the living room and there's toys on that rug, my dogs do not go on that rug. But when my dogs go and get on their vet bed or in their bed, no child will bother them. No child will even go anywhere near the dog's bed when there isn't a dog in it, because that's the dog zone. Mm. And that brings up respect. But I hear these horror stories of these dogs that, oh, I was washing up and I left the dog in the room with the child. It just can't be done. It's not easy. It's hard work. It's worth it because children can learn so much from growing up with a dog. But there has to be boundaries there, and you have to be monitoring them all the time. And if you're going to get a dog, a border collie, do some research onto the background of the dog you're getting. If you're getting it from a rescue, try and find out as much as you can and assume that whoever's had it before, whatever's happened to it, that it's had some bad training or no training at all. Otherwise, it wouldn't be in rescue. So you start from scratch. And what happens is people take a rescue dog home, and because it's a rescue, let's give it lots of tender, loving care, and we'll put the rules down later. If you took a foster child home, you wouldn't say, there's the fridge, the freezer, the TV, the computer, help yourself. You'd say, go to your room. When you're settled, come down and we'll discuss the rules. That's exactly what you do with a dog. You take it in, you give it its bed, you give it its food, and then you start extending the boundaries as the dog settles in, but don't give it too much too soon. It needs to feel its feet. And the worst thing to do with anything, whether it's a puppy, a young dog, or a rescue dog, and people do it, they think they're doing it for the best, within 2 or 3 days of having it, they're out visiting, walking, taking it to see people, getting it to experience everything. They're better off not doing it. We advise anybody who takes a rescue from us, 3 months. You'd have to have a 3-month settling in period. Don't go taking it out to everybody. That time will come later. But the dog has been in a rescue. You might know you're giving it a permanent loving home. It doesn't know it. It has to learn that the home is where it lives. That's its base, its pack area. You are its pack, and its pack leaders or its parent figure. That's where it's safe. It has to bond with new owners before it starts getting introduced to other things. And if it's a puppy, it's just the same. Don't go taking it out and handing it over to everybody. You must form your bond with that dog before you start letting everybody else try to interfere with it. And leave toys alone until you form that bond.
Just
love them. Feed them on a sensible diet, love them, and put boundaries on. It's like parenting a 5-year-old child. They need lots of love. They need boundaries, they need parameters to work within, and they need empathy creating. They need you to communicate with them. And they don't need 10 miles walking every day and a ball throwing exercise. Trust me, they don't. They just need sensible exercise.
Now, you mentioned children there. So how do they interact with the family? Do they, because they, I mean, the famous phrase is, isn't it, one man and his dog. Are they a one-man dog? Or, you know, how do they interact with the family?
Very, very well. There's always usually one person in the family that they lean to. For example, I have my dogs, and my daughter who lives next door to me has her dogs. If she isn't at home, or if I'm away doing a seminar, the dogs will answer to the person who is at home. But if we're both at home, mine will answer to me and hers will answer to her. They work out where they need to be and who they need to be responding to. So if you have a home where, let's say, husband, wife and children, they will respond mainly to one of the adults, but they will still respond to the other adult because everybody has to be higher in the family status than the dog. And one of the mistakes that people make is if a child says to the dog, sit down, and the dog doesn't, oh, look at little Johnny trying to make the dog sit down. What they should be saying is, hey, sit down when he tells you to. So the children, the mistakes that happen is, once again, not thinking like a canine. We hear these tales of border collies round children up and nip them because that's what they do with sheep. These dogs are intelligent. They know the difference between a flock of sheep and a garden full of children. But if you allow the dog to see the children as its siblings, well, why can't it nip them? Because dogs nip their siblings. Perfectly in agreement for the child to nip them back, but because that doesn't work that way. Once the dog has nipped a child, and the parent, oh, that's it, you know, you're either off into rescue or we're going to have you put down. So, but if the children are senior to the dog, well, then the dog won't nip them. The dog will never, ever, ever turn on a senior canine or a pack leader and bite them. So if the dog is biting somebody in the family, then we have total breakdown in communication of who it is that's in the higher status. That's what happens with us. When people come to me and they've got a dog that's actually turned on them, we have to say, look, if it's pulling on a lead, it's not coming back to you, or it's actually tried to nip you, it's seeing you as just a pack member. We have to totally turn around the status where the dog understands that the whole house belongs to you, you're in control of the house. And it doesn't, you know, I am not hard. I have a dog sleeping on my bed, and because we've had one of those operations for the past week, I seem to have found myself with two on my bed. But it is my bed, and it's my house. And if I don't want them on it, there's no sulking and no argument. Just get off it.
Yeah.
So they do have the run of my house, but it is my house. When somebody knocks at the door, they bark, they let me know. And then they stand out of the way until the person's come in, and I've decided whether they can interact with them or not. And don't ever run away with the idea that my dog's obedient. Because if you took my dog to a training class and he had to do one of these 5 minutes out of sight downstairs, mine would say, yeah, all right, she's not looking, come on, let's go off and have a sniff. But I can take them anywhere, to seminars, crowded rooms, take them on a train, and it's like having a child. Whatever they do at home, fine, but when we're out in public, you behave yourselves. And so far, they have never, ever let me down. They are perfectly well-mannered. I won't say obedient to the point of I'll sit down here all night and never move, because mine will question me and turn around and say, hang on a minute, why have I got to lay in this position all night when you're walking around? What are you playing at? But I like that. I like the dog to question me, because I wouldn't make a child sit in one place for a length of time.
No.
So to me, the dog has to be biddable. They have to be well-mannered, and as long as they do that and they show some respect and they don't go out misbehaving when we're out anywhere, just like the kids, that's fine. I once said to my kids, you might have been little monsters at home, but you never showed me up in public. And they said, well, we got the look. Then you've got to have the look for your dog that says, look, this is a time when you behave yourself. And I can take them anywhere, and they are so good. So if they want to be little monsters at home occasionally, that's fine.
Yeah.
As long as you don't go around biting people and interfering and being bad-mannered, and they don't. They're so respectful.
Yeah.
That's what it's all about. And yet I've seen dogs that have won competitions pulling people on a lead and biting other people. It's all to do with manners and respect, and the fact that they are so very, very sensitive, the border collies, and so intelligent.
Yeah.
And yes, when you look into their eyes, you can see the soul. They're beautiful.
Yeah, yeah. What's the best way to motivate a border collie then, you know, with training?
Want it to do it and ask it to do it. I'll tell you something about, I'll tell you more politely than I was told it when I was 6 years old. The collie dog keeps its brains under its tail. When the tail goes up, the brain drops out. I wasn't told it as politely as that. When you see a dog flying its tail all over the air, it isn't actually thinking. My dogs, I do not train them with toys, tidbits or gadgets. But they all get a biscuit when they go to bed on a night. I'm not against the tidbits. But wherever I go, they are watching me and going with me and doing things with me. How do you motivate a child to do something? You have that child wanting to do it for you because they know that you'll be proud of them.
Yeah,
if you keep bribing children with bars of chocolate. A lady said something to me at a seminar recently. I had to smile. She said, if you don't give your dog tidbits and treats, how do you get it to sit? And I said, how do you get yours to sit? She said, well, I get mine to sit and I give it a treat. So I said, well, I can't understand what your question is. She said, well, how do you do it if you don't give it a treat? But she got her dog to sit and then gave it a treat. Well, I get mine to sit and I give them a cuddle.
Yeah, yeah.
But She was actually asking me, how did I get it to sit? But she already could get hers to sit, so why did she need to give it a treat?
Yes.
It's like saying to a child, if you wash the pots up, I'll give you a chocolate bar. So the child will never wash the pots up unless they get a chocolate bar.
That's the trouble, isn't it? Yeah.
There's a lot of comparisons between some of today's dogs and some of the children we see on the street corners.
Yeah, yeah. Another thing we often hear about border collies sort of is if they're left, you know, if you don't occupy that brain, they get bored, they get destructive. Is that true?
Yes, on some of the dogs I've seen, but no, not for the breed itself, it shouldn't do. But people will say to me, I'll say, does the dog have toys? Yep, they're all over the house. Well, how does it differentiate between toys and shoes and socks? And my dogs don't have anything like that in the house. If they want to play with a ball, they'll either go into the utility or go outside. I didn't have my kids kicking a ball around the house. And at my home, my lounge is my chill-out area. And when I go in it on the night, all the dogs will come in and just flop and go to sleep. Mm-hmm. So they don't need to do that. But then you have to be sensible with it. I've had people ring up and they're wanting a dog from the trust and they're going to be working 5 days a week. No dog of any age should be left from 9 to 5 5 days a week.
No, no.
There's no point in having a dog. And neither do I see any point in having a dog working 5 days a week, 9 to 5, and putting it in a crèche or having a dog sitter. It might sound harsh, but the dog is not building a relationship up with you. It's building it up with somebody else. It's almost like it's been divided between two homes. The dog needs to belong. It needs to have its one man, one dog relationship or one family, one dog relationship.
Mm-hmm.
But they can be so content if people didn't wind them up with things. They get squeaky toys and they get the tuggy toys. They're educated to constantly be on the go. They get a puppy, they play, the puppy sleeps. It wakes up, play, the puppy sleeps. It wakes up, they play. Suddenly, the puppy wakes up and expects to be entertained.
Mm.
It expects to be played with. So it's actually, albeit unwittingly, being taught to always be on the go and be disrespectful of the house. Whereas if I have a puppy or a young dog in the house for a rescue, it will go into a cage until it understands that's its place. Then it will have a bed. That's its place. If it wants to chew something, it chews a bone or whatever I choose for it to chew in an area, not in my area. That puppy grows up to understand I only chew this and I only chew it there. Now I can tell it it's wrong if it chews something in the house. But if you allow it to chew all over the place, how can you tell it off if it chews the skirting board? What's the difference?
Yeah, yeah.
It has to be clear to a dog, you know. We can't give it multiple choices. We don't say to a child, don't take the last biscuit off the plate unless it's going to go soft. Nobody likes it or there's more in the tin. You wouldn't give a child multiple choices.
No, no.
You know, you would say, don't take the last biscuit off the plate. But we give a dog multiple choices. There's dozens of toys on the floor. Well, you know, you might as well take that candle off the hearth and that shoe and sock over there and the towel off the heater. Because it has all these choices. If it has one toy to play in one area at a certain time, then it's quite clear to the dog, this is what I play with in this area.
Yeah.
And on a night, when the family go in the room and sit down to watch TV, I go in and I either sit with them or sit in my bed. But that's my time to go to sleep.
Yeah.
But the dog brings a toy to pester and they play with it for 10 minutes to calm it down. But that's not playing to calm it down. The dog now thinks every time they sit in there, I'll take a toy and they'll play with me.
Mm.
You have to be clear to a dog. You know, it's black and white. This you can't do, this you can do. And gradually it grows to live into the grey area.
Yes. Yeah. Definitely. Definitely. Is there, you know, we kind of hear a lot with border collies, you know, you need to have a certain lifestyle, you need to be active or, you know, that kind of thing. Is there, you know, an ideal family for a border collie? Or, you know, what's the important thing that's going to make you a good border collie owner?
Heck of a lot of patience and a lot of learning. There isn't, I mean, if we said it's we need the ideal scenario for a border collie, I agree with what some people say when they should all be working, but that is totally impossible. There are far too many border collies in this country for what there are working homes. They're already in companion homes, and I see no problem with that whatsoever. But the wrong reasons to get a border collie are, I want to do agility or compete, or I want a border collie because they're easy. Or I've seen one and it looks so nice and it was doing all the wrong reasons. You're taking it into your house, an extra child. And you have to put that commitment into it. And it is a huge commitment. It's a time when you're going to be saying, for some time we won't be going out to do this, that or the other. Holidays are going to change. It's a commitment. And I have to learn as much as I can about this dog. A gentleman came to me 5 years ago and nobody would let him have a border collie from a rescue because he'd never had a dog before.
Hmm.
And we managed to convince a rescue that it was the right owner for a border collie. And it took him 3 of those 5 years to get how he needed to be with the dog because she was a problem dog. She was a rescue. And he's a fantastic border collie owner now.
Mm.
But he has put an awful lot of work into learning and an awful lot into it. And he has been on the phone to me night after night after night until I thought my ear was going to drop off listening to him.
Mm.
But he's got it. You know, he's got a really well-mannered dog. And he's never ever sat back and said, oh, that's it, it'll do.
Mm.
It'll be all right as it is. He said, no, you know, she came in last night, she did this, and I'm not so sure that was right, and he's really worked at it. And I had a friend many years ago, and somebody said to her, you're lucky, you've got such well-behaved children. She turned around and she said, look, it's got damn all to do with it. It was hard work.
Mm.
And that's exactly the same with having a well-mannered dog. And you can't just take a dog on and expect it to be a breeze. There's hard work going in it. But like putting the hard work into bringing children up, it can be so rewarding. They're very, very intelligent. And basically, at the end of the day, these dogs were the companion 20, 30 years ago because people took them in and treated them as an extra family member but put rules and regulations on. We didn't have high energy food, we didn't have tickers, and we didn't have squeaky toys and tuggy toys 30 years ago. And basically, we didn't have the dog problems then that we have now, percentage. So if we look at that and we think, well, just hang on a minute, you know, I've got a squeaky toy and I've got this thing you stuff food into and I've got this thing that you tug and I've got this makes a noise over here and I've got another dozen. I've got this toy box and I've got all these different leads. When do I actually sit and talk to this dog without playing with it? Well, let's put them all away. People come to me in a consultation. They'll ring me up after a month and say, I've put the whole lot away. I've put them in the utility. We get one ball out occasionally and have a game, but most of the time we talk. And it's amazing.
Mm.
My dog is actually wanting to stay with me when we go out for a walk. And I said, yeah, because you're actually building up the one person and dog relationship that you need.
Doesn't that sound great? Getting back to basics, just you and your dog building up a relationship. Barbara has proved it works. She's written several books and has a magazine, Freedom of Spirit, that you can subscribe to. And if you'd like to find out more about her and her dogs and the opportunities on offer to meet them, visit her website, www.bordercollies.co.uk. My dog is not a child substitute. At least, that's what his piano teacher says. Rita Rudner. It's Dogcast Radio's third birthday. We've enjoyed 3 years of bringing you anything and everything dog-related, and we hope you've enjoyed it too. We'll be back in September with the next show featuring interviews with the owner of a dog who is lucky to be alive, and with an expert and author who can help you help your dog to be calmer. In the meantime, we're going to get a bit calmer, as we're taking a break in Scotland with our dogs. I can't wait to paddle in Loch Ness with Buddy and Star. But don't forget, the next Dogcast Radio will be out on September the 13th. So until then, take care of yourselves and your dogs. Thanks for listening to Dogcast Radio, available from www.dogcastradio.com. That's dogcastradio.com. If you'd like to get in touch with us, and wherever you are in the world, we'd love to hear from you. You can do so in a variety of ways. By phone from the UK, you can contact us on 0121 288 0922. From the US, you can contact us on our American number, which is 315 849 2022. From any other country, you'll need your international exit code and then 44121 288 0922. You can contact us on Skype with the ident Dogcast Radio. That's all one word, Dogcast Radio. By email, you can contact me on julie@dogcastradio.com. When contacting us by email, if you have the facilities, please record your questions or comments and send them to us as an audio file. That way we can include them directly in our programme. We can accept most formats, for example, WAV, MP3. All these methods of contacting us can be found on our website, which is www.dogcastradio.com. And as ever, the final word goes to Jenny.
Knock, knock.
Who's there?
Arthur.
Arthur who?
Arthur, any dogs out there?